It is 8:30, and we have with us live in the studios once again, Joff Parrish, co-editor at Eat the Steak. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. Maria is not in this week. She's off on vacation for the next couple weeks. So,
That's right.
Listeners are stuck with me. It's a darn shame.
But stay with us anyway.
Yes, but stay with us anyway. It'll be an entertaining half hour.
That's right.
You get a chance to listen to me screw up.
All right, and just so keep your pencils and paper ready. See how many X's we can put down here.
Oh, and speaking of which, if people want to send an email question, they should do that too.
Oh, you are correct. Thank you for getting to mention that. They can send them in to dj@kexp.org.
And we will try and get to those questions before the end of the half hour. We'll try
to. Keep them short.
No guarantees.
Speaking of which, let's go to national. Start out with national news, and it looks like last week we talked about particular people within the current administration cooking some of the books, the studies that come out, and deleting. Key portions.
In particular, we talked about Philip Cooney and his role in the Bush administration deleting science reports that were critical of global warming, but that did not have the Bush administration spin on what they prefer to call climate change. And he landed on his feet this week with a nice cushy job with ExxonMobil, which is the corporation that has been most adamant in criticizing global warming and the whole science behind global warming.
That's because he resigned, right?
He resigned. Yes, he resigned in disgrace and shame, and got a nice cushy job with his pals at ExxonMobil. Meanwhile, a couple more interesting stories of the Bush administration or their allies cooking the books came out this week. First of all, there was the autopsy that came out. The medical examiner that reported in the case of Terry Schiavo, the Pinellas Pasco County, Florida medical examiner. And all of those quack scientists and doctors that came out and said that Terry Schiavo could live and that she could recover and that she really was trying to smile at the camera and all of this, they were wrong. She had less than half of her brain left. The rest of it had atrophied. The neurons literally were not there. There was absolutely no opportunity for her to ever recover. She was blind, so she couldn't have been staring at the camera. The medical examiner also found that there was no evidence of abuse. There was no evidence of any kind of, for example, physical abuse or poisoning by her husband that led to her collapse in 1990. That was one of the accusations that the parents made. And this really raises the question of raises a couple of interesting questions, one of which is the length to which these conservatives will trot out pseudo experts to try and buttress their case when reputable scientists of all types are pretty much in agreement on something. There was really very little diagnostic doubt among doctors in the courts who had looked at Schiavo's case that she was in a permanent vegetative state, that she wasn't going to recover, that there was no hope of her recovering, and yet the Bush administration and its allies were successful in muddying the issue, and that led to the court case being dragged out for a number of years, and even Jeb Bush this week saying that he wanted to try and reopen the case in terms of how quickly Schiavo's husband called 911 when Schiavo originally collapsed in 1990, when that's already been testified to under oath. That it was a 4-minute gap between when 911 was when she collapsed and when paramedics arrived. So you have this case of trying to muddy the waters, trying to muddy the issue and cause confusion in people's minds. You had another excellent example of that come up in a story that just came out this morning of BLM scientists. Coming or former BLM scientists now retired, but they were active last year, and they're talking about scientific reports that were produced under the BLM, where the original draft talked about a proposed deregulation of grazing regulations, cattle regulations that were being pushed by cattle ranchers, that these regulations were going to be harmful to plant life, harmful to animal life, in some cases harmful to endangered species. Those portions of the scientific reports were excised from the final report, and then the deregulation adopted. This is an abuse of science. This is something we're seeing time and again under the Bush administration.
BLM being the Bureau of Land Management,
right?
Excellent. All right. Moving along, John Conyers had a much anticipated hearing this week.
Yeah, he did on the Downing Street memo. The Downing Street memo is finally reaching some sort of critical mass in terms of media coverage and media awareness that this really is some sort of a smoking gun, in that it verifies what Richard Clark and Paul O'Neill had originally said in their testimony before Congress regarding the Bush administration being adamant a number of months ahead of time about pursuing war in Iraq. But it does a couple of things that those testimonies did not do. One is that it is actual, it's actually codified in a government document for a change. This is something that the British government produced, not just a disgruntled former employee. The other part of it that's different is talking about the fixing of administration policy, talking about the idea that we're going to start with the conclusion, which is that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and he had ties to al-Qaeda, and then we're going to look for intelligence, we're going to look for information that supports that conclusion, rather than the other way around, looking for information and then drawing a conclusion from that information. So this is something that would not have been possible without the internet, without all of the pressure that a lot of people, including probably listeners to this program, put on their elected officials, put on media outlets to try and cover this story, to try and pay attention to this story, because it is important. It took a long time. It took 6 weeks to percolate and get into the news and get into mainstream awareness in this country, but it's finally sort of there, and you're starting to see questions of Bush administration officials on this that they're having a hard time answering, frankly. They're basically saying, well, we don't want to go to the past. We've already debated all of this. This is already something that's already been settled. Well, it isn't something that's already been settled. If you're talking about a cover-up, if you're talking about an abuse of presidential authority and lying to Congress and lying to the UN and lying to the American public in a way that has led to the deaths of thousands of American soldiers and hundreds of at least 100,000 Iraqi civilians, this is not something at all that's in the past. We're dealing with the consequences of this policy in a day in, day out basis. And we'll talk about that more with This Week in Iraq. I mean, it's something we talk about every week.
Well, and speaking of having an impact on things, there is now a current call out to people to contact their congressional reps about NPR and PBS funding, which is amusing because for years now I've been getting emails from people saying,
internet hoax, yeah. Internet hoax, yes.
Which has just got it so that when this one finally came around, it's just like, oh yeah, right.
But this comes from Robert McChesney and from people who are at the forefront of the media democracy movement and have a lot of credibility. We've seen in the past several months a real concerted effort on the part of the Coalition for Public Broadcasting?
The Corporation
for Public Broadcasting.
Yeah, they're not even a coalition.
Me. Yeah, I know the acronym, CPB. Whereby the head of the CPB is a Bush administration appointee who has been seeking to purge public broadcasting, PBS and NPR, of what he believes is liberal bias. And what he's doing basically is trying to ensure conservative bias He targeted for a particular study the Bill Moyers Now program. He's attempted to put into place more conservative talking heads programs of the type that we already see on the networks on the weekend mornings. This is something that is going hand in hand with the congressional effort to strike funding from NPR and from PBS. So yeah, it's time to contact your senators and your congresspeople. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's something people should be doing all the time anyway, but now we have, you know, more specifics for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and continuing on that same theme, there was a resolution related to the Patriot Act this week that ran into some trouble. And a lot of that, again, came from people who have been speaking out about this over the years.
Yeah, we had the debate in the House of Representatives over whether to make the provisions in the Patriot Act permanent. One provision in particular in the Patriot Act that actually went down in flames this week, it surprised a lot of people, but the provision that allowed the Justice Department, the FBI, to go through library records, to go through bookstore records without the awareness of people involved, without any sort of judicial oversight, any kind of search warrant, and find out what people are reading, find out what people are taking out of the libraries, and actually also have gag orders on librarians and on bookstore clerks so that they could not tell you if the feds came around and actually asked for information on this. And we also don't know over the past, three, 4 years, how often this has actually happened, because that also is information that's not available to the public. Well, a coalition of conservative civil libertarian Republicans and Democrats came together, and they actually voted this down by, I think it was like 240 to 180, something like that, in the House of Representatives. So this is something that President Bush has threatened to veto, so it's not a done deal yet, but we will see. We will see how this plays out. This is something that's very much heartening, very much could not have happened without grassroots opposition over the past several years to the Patriot Act.
And I know that librarians led the charge in that one from early
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of very good librarians out there who are very good civil libertarians.
Very good. Moving along, Kellogg Brown and Root got a nice, juicy award this week.
Yeah, what was it? $30
million? $30 million for a new facility at Guantanamo, a 220-bed facility. They will be building.
Well, you know, Howard Johnson's hadn't quite built enough out that way. They're all the tourists that come through. It's remarkable that at a time when Guantanamo is undergoing so much public criticism and it's so much in the news, and we're having congressional hearings actually on the conditions of prisoners there, that they're actually talking about expanding the facilities there and bringing in more prisoners that don't have access to due process. This is something, again, that the Bush administration is just going to have to keep getting more and more pressure on. More and more, people contacting the White House, contacting the Pentagon, contacting elected representatives and saying, don't forget Gitmo, don't forget Guantanamo Bay, because this is, as Amnesty International says, the gulag of our times, and the only people who can fix that are people in the United States.
All right. Well, jumping over to international, sort of, Uzbekistan turns out looks like some...
Oh, that's international.
That is, but it has ties here to home.
Yes.
So, they had some training assistance?
About a month ago, on May 16th, as you'll recall, we talked about it a little bit at the time on this program. There was an incident in Uzbekistan whereby anti-government activists were protesting in a town called Andhan. Against government officials and government soldiers and troops and the police opened fire on them, opened fire on unarmed civilians, killed hundreds of them. This is a country that has a horrendous human rights record, that doesn't have elections, that represses people, that has political prisoners in jail. Horrible human rights record from Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch and groups like that. So anyway, it comes out this week that the battalions that actually opened fire at Andhan were trained by the United States, similar to the School of the Americas, but a little bit different. That both the intelligence battalions, military battalions, and the internal, what's the name of it here? Ministry of Internal Affairs, that's the name of it, were trained by the U.S. Pentagon, State Department, the CIA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, in trainings that have been worth millions of dollars each year. But the specific units that that participated in Andhan were trained by the United States, and this is something that potentially you want to have some sort of congressional hearings on. You want to have some sort of oversight on, because similar to, again, the School of the Americas. This is something that, when we're in the middle of a war on terror with Muslim populations, and Uzbekistan is almost entirely a Muslim country, you do not want the United States, which has set up military bases in Uzbekistan since 9/11, which has been very close to the Uzbekistan government, you don't want us on the wrong side of these issues. You don't want us propping up these dictators, and you certainly don't want us training the military and police units that are opening fire on unarmed civilians.
All right. Well, let's move over then to this week in Iraq.
Well, we've got another offensive this week in Iraq, in the western part of the country, in Anbar province, near the Syrian border. The Operation Rambe, which is Arabic for spear. This is going on in border towns. This is the third time we've had such operations after a couple last month, Operation New Market and Operation Matador. Obviously it's not working. The idea, according to the military, is to try and stem foreign fighters from coming in and pursuing suicide bombings. The only problem with this, of course, is that many of the suicide bombings that are taking place aren't being carried out by foreign bombers. They're being carried out by Iraqis. And we saw that again this week, a number of suicide bombings. Suicide bombings killed 49 people on Thursday alone, another 11 people on Friday, 60 people in the two-day total. And we saw a couple hundred people in the course of the week dying. Again, a very bloody week in Iraq. And at the same time, we seem to have been reaching a tipping point in terms of public opinion here in the United States on Iraq. A point at which a critical mass whereby media seem to be covering what's going wrong in Iraq more, and people seem to be more critical of it. We had a number of polls who come out this week. First of all, Bush's approval poll rating, which is way down. It's down to 42% from 51% after the November election. Very unfavorably to where Clinton and Reagan were at the same point in their second term, 16-59% respectively. You had 50. Congress did even worse, incidentally, in that same poll. They were down to 33%, the Republican-controlled Congress. 37% approve in that same poll of Bush's handling of Iraq. 60% say Iraq is going badly. 33% say the country is on the right track. 61% say the country is on the wrong track. Gallup had a poll this week. 59% think the U.S. should withdraw some or all troops from Iraq. 28% think the U.S. should withdraw all of its troops from Iraq. This is something you're not seeing very many Democrats even try to speak for. And at the same time, 28% of the American public thinks we should be withdrawing all of our troops from Iraq. The politicians are going to have to try and catch up on that. We have 56% saying launching of the war was not worth it. We have an ABC News Washington Post poll saying nearly three-quarters saying that the casualty levels in Iraq are unacceptable. We have another report where 42% of Americans likened Iraq to Vietnam. So there's a real sense in which the American public gets it, that things are going badly in Iraq, and that the Bush administration is responsible for it. Now, at that same time, you're having people call for withdrawal of some or all troops from Iraq. You're having George Bush saying, absolutely, that's not going to happen. In fact, they're talking about maybe even trying to bring more troops into Iraq. This is something where there's a real conflict between the direction that the American public opinion is going and where the Bush administration itself is going. The real stubbornness on behalf of the Bush administration and lack of vision, similar to what we've seen over the last 5 years. You know, if they continue over this over the next 3 years, we're going to have a real mess in Iraq by the time this is all over. because it doesn't look hopeful that that the Bush administration is going to try and change its policies anytime soon.
Well, I thought it was actually really inspiring to watch the press conference on Thursday of the bipartisan resolution put forth by two Democrats and two Republicans for U.S. withdrawal out of Iraq. In fact, I thought it was so exciting that I'm going to actually air that tomorrow morning at 6:30. But
great.
It's not the end all solution, but it's the first time any of them have publicly spoken and done something since this whole thing began. So
yeah, and again, we got to this point much quicker than Congress or the American public got to it in the course of Vietnam. In terms of casualty levels, in terms of troop commitments, in terms of all of that. So it is very hopeful, and it really speaks to the fact that that there is a vibrant alternative media out there, that people in the course of the internet have access to foreign media, and the people have been aware, even when the American media has not been reporting it, that things are going badly in Iraq and that the Bush administration's rose-colored glasses are just that, that they're not being truthful when they talk about how wonderfully things are going with Iraqi democracy.
All right. Well, moving back closer to home, the Government Accountability Project released a study this week that, surprise, surprise, indicates that stuff is leaking and moving out of hand for very toxic stuff much quicker than expected.
Yeah, the Government Accountability Project, GAP, it's a fine Seattle-based nonprofit NGO that works here in New York and Washington to try and bring attention to give access to government whistleblowers and to bring attention to environmental degradation in Hanford. And they came out with a project this week that is not a scientifically binding peer review based project, but it's a survey. And the survey looked at where radiation could be found off premises, off site of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation. And what it found was really disturbing. It found that there was a lot of plant and animal life outside the Hanford Nuclear Reservation in the Hanford Reach and other areas, even toward Richland and some of the populated areas where deer and mouse scat was radioactive, where plant life was radioactive, where tumbleweeds were radioactive, and really urging the Department of Energy to take a look at this information and to try and figure out where the radiation is going and ways to stem it, because the DOE hasn't been doing enough to try and stem radiation off premises at Hanford.
Yeah, from what I gathered, they had found radioactive dust in attics in Richland. They found radioactive material in minnows that were in
fish minnows. They found plutonium
and
clams.
And clams.
Yeah.
So nothing like a nice plutonium clam sauce.
Yeah, don't do a clam bake at the Columbia River. That's not a good idea.
All right. So I've got about 5 minutes left, and we have a question for you from our email. And it's too bad we don't have Maria here this week, because this is actually a little more in her ballpark. Should I be so concerned with the U.S. economy, current state of affairs, foreign and domestic, and everything in general, that I may want to consider investing all my money in euros and make a plan to move? Are we going to go into a big recession / depression?
Yeah, I do wish Maria was here for that. I don't think so. I think we're more likely to stay in the current malaise that we're in rather than moving toward a crash. I think that longer term, we may be in trouble. And the longer term that I'm talking about is more like 5-10 years down the road, because of the trade deficit, because of the deficit spending. But that's not something that's going to come to a head right away. But I would certainly say that planning for the longer term, brace yourselves, because the policies that are being pursued right now are bound to catch up with us sooner or later, and probably a little bit later than sooner. But it's still bad policy and policy that's not likely to change in the next 3 years.
All right, and also we've got some events coming up this week and this weekend. This weekend being the start of many summer festivities.
Yeah, we've got Fremont starting this weekend, and that reminds me, we've got somewhat of a controversy coming up next weekend with Gay Pride, in that the Pride Committee, the committee that organizes Gay Pride, is talking about moving the march next year, not this year. This year it'll still be where it has been for the last 20 years, going up Broadway to Volunteer Park, but what they're talking about doing is moving it to Seattle Center and then marching through downtown next year, the idea being to claim the entire city rather than the sort of gay ghetto of Capitol Hill as being a subject appropriate to Gay Pride. And, you know, if you look at other cities who are like this, with San Francisco's Gay Pride, it goes from the Castro to the downtown area, so it does both of them. I think a lot of people will be upset at the idea of having that march move. So next week at the Gay Pride event might be a good time to buttonhole some of the organizers and let them know what you think one way or the other about that idea. But the Fremont Festival is happening this week, and then we've got some speakers coming in on Thursday night, right?
Yeah, the Iraqi labor leaders are coming into town. They're going to be speaking at the Labor Temple Thursday. Mm-hmm. At 7 p.m. So I understand they work with the, I believe, the oil ministry there. I don't have that right in front of me, but
I think that's right, yeah.
Should be one of those rare occasions when you can actually find out what's happening with labor in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And in this particular one, other countries we are occupying.
Yes, and making life very difficult for labor leaders in, too.
So, speaking of the summertime, you guys had a potluck last
week. Yeah, we did, and we had a thank you for the 20 or 25 people who came out to the potluck last week. We had a great time, even though it was raining. that part of it wasn't great, but we did have a good time. We're also in the middle of a pledge drive, and it occurs to me in talking about trying to raise money for Eat the State, and the pledge drive has not been going particularly well. We hope to raise $6,000, and the idea was to try and go to 12 pages with our issues for Eat the State, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen because, quite frankly, we're not getting enough money in. We had a goal of $6,000. We've only gotten $930 in so far, so we need to raise that a little bit. But it has occurred to us that we didn't even mention the stuff that you can get, which we've done in past
drives,
and we just kind of assumed that people knew it this time too. But for a $100 pledge, you get a fabulous Eat the State T-shirt, complete with the famous mission statement on back, which tells the world what you think of mission statements. And then for $300, Maria or I or both of us will come and have dinner with you at a restaurant of your choice or of our choice. So those are things that we can offer to folks. You know, if you want to meet up with Maria and I, it's a good chance to do it. All you have to do is donate to Eat the State. But we make it easy for you. You can donate through PayPal on our website at www.eatthestate.org. You can send your donations by check or money order to P.O. Box 85541, Seattle, Washington 98145. And it all goes to printing and a little bit to postage for Eat the State. There's very little administrative cost or overhead. It basically all goes toward getting the information out, the same sort of information that you hear every week on this program. So if you like what you hear, if you like what you read, please support it, because listeners and readers like you are the only way to make it possible.